Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
All right, it is the Disruption Zone. My friend Nikki Gosar is here with us. You know what's so funny, Nikki? Thanks for coming on. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks for having me on, Leland.
It's so weird how like I got connected to you, because it all started when I saw a TV show, and this TV show was, I want to say it was ID or something. I was sick, and yes. I was watching TV all day, binge watching like a real crime show. And your story pops up and you're on this show, and I'm thinking, like, it resonated with me for whatever reason. And I was just like, holy crap, this is exactly why the Second Amendment is necessary. What happened to you is exactly why we should always be able to be armed at all times. And then later we ended up getting connected through some political stuff, and now we're friends, and here we are talking about really important stuff surrounding our justice system. So it's kind of weird how small the world ends up being. But can we start by just telling people your story again, so people understand where you're coming from on all of this?
Yeah, my husband Ben was murdered in front of me by a man who was stalking me 11 years ago. And because of Tennessee state law, you know, we lived in Tennessee, because of that law at the time, I had to leave my legal permitted firearm that I normally carried for self-defense locked inside of my vehicle, because Ben and I were in a restaurant that was a gun-free zone. So I followed the law, left the gun locked in the car. Of course, the man who was stalking me did not have a handgun carry permit. He brought a gun in illegally into a gun-free zone. And when I asked management to please help me, I told them, this man is stalking me, please get him out of here. When they went to confront him and asked him to leave, he pulled a 45 from under his jacket and shot my husband completely unprovoked in the head. And then he stood over Ben and continued to fire six more rounds into him. I will probably wonder for the rest of my life if I could have prevented that. Of course, I'll never know, because I was denied a chance. I was stalked and defenseless. So I've just tried over the past 11 years to educate people about the importance of the basic human right of self-defense, our Second Amendment, and why gun-free zones are actually dangerous. I think they encourage evil people to do evil things, knowing that no one can stop them.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. And I know it doesn't ever get any easier for you, but it has made you an incredible communicator. You've written a book about this. Tell me a little bit about that.
The book is called Stalked and Defenseless, and it's available on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble. And I have a website, stalkedanddefenseless.com. It really was kind of therapeutic writing the book, but it was also disturbing, if that makes any sense.
Sort of, kind of. I mean, I will never say I understand what you're going through, because I didn't go through it. But yeah, I get it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I just hope that when people read the book, it really makes them have a greater understanding of, you know, why we need to be able to protect ourselves. And I don't want people to be paranoid,
right?
You know, but I do want people to be prepared, because quite frankly, none of us are immune from evil showing up,
right,
and doing horrible things to us and our loved ones, and completely changing your future. So I just try to do what I can and hope that, you know, there are people out there that take it to heart and listen. And I encourage people to go get training, firearms training, get your handgun carry permit, especially the ladies. It's not that I don't care about the guys. I do care about the guys. And, you know, I do care about the guys, but let's face it. I mean, in general, men are just stronger physically than women.
Right.
And women are at a huge disadvantage physically. And that gun is a great equalizer. It puts you on equal footing with someone who aims to harm you, and it gives you at least a chance. I don't know about you, but I want at least a fighting chance.
Right. Right. I think, and that's, I think a lot of people on the left, or at least the anti-gun crowd, have this sort of idea that those of us who support the Second Amendment think that the Second Amendment is the end all be all. It's not. I know that, but this is one of the things that I think having an educated firearms armed populace does to keep the broader part of society safer. And that is that as a law-abiding gun owner who is a concealed carry permit holder who's done a lot of training, I will do everything I can to not find myself in a situation where I might have to use that firearm. That was not your ability. You could not do that. You were working. You were in a situation you literally could not have avoided. I mean, it was textbook in that sense. But, you know, having people educated about firearms, like we understand as gun owners that the firearm doesn't mean automatically we're going to survive an evil situation. It just means we have, like you said, a fighting chance. Your fighting chance was taken away from you by a stupid rule.
Yeah. Yeah. So the laws actually changed in the state of Tennessee now. I worked alongside the sponsor of the restaurant carry bill at the time, Senator Doug Jackson, who actually was a Democrat. He was a very pro-gun Democrat. And he had me come to the Capitol and sit with him on the Senate floor as he told my story and had me stand up. And he read the last love letter that Ben ever gave me on the Senate floor. And they voted and it passed. So the law has now changed in Tennessee. As long as you've got your handgun carry permit and as long as you are not drinking any alcohol, then you can carry in restaurants that do serve alcohol. Now, they're still allowed to post a no guns allowed sign if the business owner wants to. But at least it's no longer state law.
Right. Well, and yeah, those properties have, I guess, a right to say we don't want it here. And you have a right to say, well, I'm not going to do business with you. But it makes sense the way the law is written now, because we trust people to go to bars and restaurants and theoretically trust them not to drink and drive. And when they do, that's a crime. Right. So if we are going to trust somebody, and it's very dangerous to drink and drive, but we trust people and say, you're on your own recognizance. Why can't we do that with a firearm as well? It just makes sense. So I know an instructor friend of mine who tells people when he's talking about, you know, a similar state law, and he says, this is not Kentucky, by the way, so people don't mistake this as Kentucky law. Please check with a lawyer before you decide on gun laws. But in his class, in his state, what he says is we should have when we go out to a bar, because in that particular state, it's the same exact law. It's just as long as you don't drink. Right. You have a designated shooter who is also the designated driver. Right. He uses that in his class and everybody always chuckles. But he's like, that's what we do when we have a group of people. We're going out to a bar. One of us is the designated shooter. He goes armed. He's the one that is going to stay sober. And he or she is also the one who's going to drive home. So, you know, it makes sense.
Right.
It's weird what's going on in our culture, too, with guns. Like, do we have this sort of weird dichotomy? I don't know if you have noticed this, but like in California, it's seeing people line up for guns, liberals who are like, wait, I have to get a background check to get a gun. They didn't know this, right? Because they've been fed these ridiculous lies about firearms for so long. And then they went in to go get a gun because of everything that's going on in the country right now. And then on the other hand, we have freaking Elmer Fudd now, who no longer has a shotgun. The Looney Tunes has taken the shotgun away from Elmer Fudd. He still has plenty of dynamite, and apparently he chases the rabbit. He chases Bugs Bunny with a Sith, which is like terrifying. And I'm like, the gratuitous violence is still there. I don't know, man. It's a weird world we live in now when it comes to firearms.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I think it takes people like you and I, it takes people like us to educate others. And you know what? There's always going to be that segment of society that just shuts us off, won't listen to us no matter what.
Right.
But there are a lot of people out there that are on the fence and not quite sure how they feel about it. And the more they are exposed to knowledgeable people that truly care about gun safety and getting proper training, then I think those people can come around to understanding why our Second Amendment is so important.
Yeah, it's fundamental. It is a fundamental right. I mean, if anybody who is attacked, we don't raise alarm if they defend themselves with their fists or if they have to grab a stick. You know, why would you raise alarm, you know, because somebody has a weapon that is a great equalizer? You mentioned when there's a very large male against a very small female, you know, is a perfect example.
Right. And I think sometimes people on the left think that if you're a gun owner, then that means you are a violent person. And that is so not true. I am not a violent person at all. Now, put in a horrible situation where I'm in fear for my life, you better believe I am definitely capable of violence.
Sure.
To save my own life or to save my family.
Right. I tell people, I speak to concealed carry classes all the time, and I tell people in the classes, I'm always like, I'm a lover, not a fighter. And in fact, when I got my concealed carry permit, I became even less likely. I'm more likely to de-escalate and to forget pride.
Right.
You know, if a guy bumps into my shoulder or somebody says something to me, I am more likely to back away, walk away. Because there's something about having the firearm that says, you know, if I escalate this in any way, shape, or form, my ass is going to jail. You know, the only way I can use this is in defense of my life. And this, whatever this is, you know, guy at a bar or whatever, is not in defense of my life. It is not worth it. Let that guy be a jerk, right? And I'm more likely to de-escalate and be like, no problem, man. We're out. Nope, no big deal. You can have this parking space. It's all yours. You know, it's like,
yeah,
I'm more likely to do that. And I guess maybe that makes you a kinder, gentler person when you actually own a firearm. It's the opposite of what they stereotype us.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I definitely would want to de-escalate. There's no way I would want to escalate anything with a firearm. No way. Because quite frankly, if I don't have to go there, I don't want to go there.
Right.
I will go there if absolutely forced, but I really don't want to go there. So yeah, de-escalation is something that I think most gun owners would do.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk to you about your op-ed in Town Hall. This is a really great piece. The thing is, you know, I think of all of America is outraged right now at what happened to George Floyd. And I think for maybe the first time, there's a proliferation on both the left and the right of an understanding that there are things in our justice system that are skewed against minority groups sometimes, and that we need to have a very serious conversation about that. I think the idea of defunding the police is stupid and the opposite of what we need to do. But I think we need to listen to those who are crying out right now saying we have an issue. And I really believe that the criminal justice system has failed African Americans in a big way. But it's also failed everyone. And you write about that in your piece here. And you weren't in any way minimizing, you know, what happened to George Floyd. You're just pointing out that there are systemic problems in our criminal justice system that affect every single person, which is perhaps, I read your column more as a call for everyone to be concerned about what we're hearing. Because it's a systemic problem throughout the justice system, and every single American has a stake in this. So I want to let you talk about your op-ed a little bit.
Sure. Well, I tell people, you know, it's called the criminal justice system, but I tell people it's just a system. I think it has failed people of all races. I mean, it's definitely understandable, you know, that people of color are outraged, and they should be. I agree. They should be. You know, they face some real problems. But, you know, there's a lot of other people out there that have felt let down by the system as well, myself in particular.
So this goes back to your story and the guy who murdered your husband. He is in jail, but perhaps not for long. And when you first told me about this, I'm livid about this. I can't believe that our system is failing you in this way. So apparently, just to fill everybody in, this guy cold-blooded really premeditated. I mean, I think you could make a strong case for premeditated murder with this guy. And he gets only 23 years in prison with theoretically no parole, but you say that was a lie.
Yeah. Yeah. Victims are lied to every day in criminal courts across the nation. I think the general public does not realize this, but it's true. Victims are lied to, and I think it's wrong. You know, that, yeah, he was only sentenced to 23 years. The judge, liberal judge in Nashville, Tennessee, his name's Judge Seth Norman. He, despite all of the overwhelming evidence, he dropped it from first degree premeditated murder to only second degree, which is why he got the 23 years. But I have to tell you, when the police searched my stalker's vehicle at the crime scene, they found two more guns, ammunition, a baseball bat, binoculars, gloves, rope, and a knife. My stalker posted to social media the day before. Of course, I didn't know because I had already deleted him and blocked him.
Right.
So I found out from the news. It was actually the news that found out the next day. He posted to social media saying, "Predator versus prey. I know who you are. Run. Where will you work where I can't find you? At home, at dinner, in your sleep, every waking moment."
How can you not call that premeditated murder? I mean, he was planning probably on killing both of you, and it was just the fact that you were maybe where you were and there were people that could intervene afterwards. But I mean, you know, he was planning on killing both of you.
I stepped away the moment I saw him. I was running. Ben and I had a mobile karaoke business that we ran. We had a contract with this restaurant. And the moment I saw this guy, I turned to Ben and I said, "Ben, that man is here. I don't feel comfortable at all. I'm going to ask management to remove him." And Ben said, "Okay, babe, you know, do whatever you need to do." So Ben's now running the karaoke show because I'm not there. I'm going through the back kitchen with the manager, telling her about this guy, and walking to the other end of the dining room where I can see what's going on. But he doesn't know where I've gone.
Right.
He has no idea where I am. And I stayed there beside this brick wall where I could see into the dining room about, I don't know, 30 feet away. And they went to talk to him. So no, he didn't know where I went, but it really makes me wonder what would have happened had I been standing right next to Ben,
right.
You know, obviously disarmed, you know, the gun's locked in the car.
Right.
But, you know, I've run over that, shoulda, coulda, woulda scenario in my mind, and it's really not healthy. I think, you know, as a victim, you can't help but to go there, but I try not to go there too much these days because there's just no way to really heal from it if you keep doing that to yourself.
Yeah. That's
so,
that's the point.
But I did discover the police had, they had discovered that very day he had purchased a number of items in preparation for this.
Wow.
And he went and purchased the shoulder holster that he used in the crime, the baseball bat, and the binoculars the day of the murder.
Wow.
And what he did was he went to downtown Nashville, where I also ran shows, and he asked, you know, oblivious acquaintances of ours where he could find us that night.
So he tracked you down.
Yeah, he hunted us down. So despite all of this, the judge dropped it.
Wow.
And then come to find out, he doesn't even have to serve his full sentence. You know, it's a lie when they tell you, oh, he's serving...
So
23 years at 100% with no parole, he's been allowed to earn early release good behavior credits. So he doesn't have to serve his full sentence.
Now, he's behaving in prison, except that this is something you've been trying to get the attention of authorities about. He's sending you letters.
Yeah. Late last year, I found out that he has been sending me twisted love letters for years. And what he does is he sends them to my former attorney, the attorney that I used for my wrongful death suit against him. Of course, he's indigent, so I get nothing. But that's how the letters got to me. And the attorney just didn't tell me. I hadn't talked to him in years. And I had contacted the attorney because I was working on my book and I needed info for the book. And that's when he told me. Wow. And he then forwarded the letters to me. And it was horrific. It was just trauma on top of trauma. And this is not good behavior. Right. Why is he right. allowed to earn early release good behavior credits? He's already earned the max, which is like 3.5 years. He gets out early. This is not something that should be rewarded.
Right.
This person should definitely have to serve his full sentence. And I believe he should be prosecuted for stalking and harassing me while he's in prison.
Right. Well, and what this does is it re-victimizes you, because now you have to, at some point, he's going to get out of prison, having done what he did to you. He's demonstrated that he still can't let this go. And so you are going to, when he gets let out again, you have to relive all of this. And that, to me, it's an utter failure of the justice system. You have a guy who, in a premeditated way, took a life, was planning to take more. And somehow, and I think this is one of the things that I think needs, when we talk about reform, I do think there needs to be police reform. But I also think that there needs to be justice system reform. We let way too many really bad people back out. And we put too many people who haven't committed anything serious in, you know, and
exactly.
That's where some of those disparities arise from, too, is that we put people on a track for a life of criminal behavior as a result of, you know, every little thing is criminalized. But on the other hand, when we have seriously dangerous people, we tend to go easy on them and let them go. And it's like this is the heart of the problem with the justice system, regardless of your race. This is the heart of what needs to be reformed, and that's why I love your story, because everyone needs to pay attention to the discussion that we're having in America right now.
Well, I can tell you this, George Floyd's family is going to be extremely disappointed once they learn that, you know, the murderer will be able to earn early release good behavior credit.
Right.
He won't have to serve his full sentence, and I think that's wrong. I think that if you've got a violent offender, I'm not talking about nonviolent offenders. Look, if you want to give nonviolent offenders early release credits, cool. But violent offenders, there should be truth in sentencing laws all across this nation for violent offenders.
Right. What do you mean by truth in sentencing? I mean, I sort of know, but I just want you to explain it.
I mean, if they give them a sentence, that's the sentence, and you truly serve it at 100%.
Right.
If they tell you 23 years, you're serving 23 years. You don't get out early for anything.
Right. So in other words, if you have a situation where, look, you can do 10 years and then you can be considered for parole, that's honest. Okay? So based on the crime, you know. But if you say you're going to do 23 years without parole, then you damn well need to do 23 years without parole.
Right.
I agree with that.
Right. When that judge told me this man is going to serve 23 years at 100% with no parole, I believed him.
Right.
And he lied to me.
Right.
He lied to me.
Yeah.
And that's wrong. Victims have been through enough.
Right now, you're also serving as the executive director of the Crime Prevention Research Center and the author of Stalked and Defenseless, How Gun Control Helped My Stalker Murder My Husband in Front of Me. Tell me a little bit about the Crime Prevention Research Center and what you do there.
Sure, we're a nonprofit, and we study crime rates across the nation, changes in laws, in particular gun laws, and how those impact crime rates and, you know, homicides, murders.
Aren't we finding that in a lot of ways, America is a pretty safe country? I mean, I know it's weird to say that when we're watching what's happening on TV sometimes, but an armed society is a polite society. We're definitely an armed society. There's over 300 million guns out there. And by and large, unless you're in specific areas, you're pretty safe in the United States of America. And I think sometimes the left likes, or the anti-gun side likes, to take statistics and aggrandize them. But the truth of the matter is, as you look at these statistics, gun owners don't tend to commit crimes, do they?
Correct. But no, gun owners, legal gun owners are very law-abiding people, even more so than law enforcement. And I'm a huge supporter of law enforcement.
Right.
And they hardly commit crimes. But permit holders, it's even less.
Yeah, it's like
so. Yeah, they're very law-abiding.
Yeah, it's some like 0.0023, some minuscule amount of crime that's committed is committed by somebody who owns a concealed carry permit. It's like crazy,
right? And the places in the U.S., the places in the U.S. where there are problems are places where obviously guns are banned.
Yes,
or there is very, very strict gun control.
Yes,
because this gun control really only impacts the law-abiding people. Right. Bad guys don't care about the law. They're not going to go get a background check.
Yeah.
They're not going to obey a gun-free zone law, you know. But those places where more good law-abiding people carry legally to protect themselves, you see lower crimes.
I think no story illustrates that better than your story. And that is that you as a law-abiding citizen did what you were supposed to do and left your gun in the car, which left you defenseless against a criminal.
Yeah.
It's insane. I want people to read your book, Stalked and Defenseless, How Gun Control Helped My Stalker Murder My Husband in Front of Me. And I think it would be good for everybody to read that. But I also would recommend at townhall.com, just Google Nikki Gozer Town Hall and your column will come up. And it's basically, you said the system has failed people of all races. And you say, I know from experience. That's your column, and it's pretty powerful. And you walk through everything that you just told us in terms of how this guy is going to get out early, despite a disturbing pattern of behavior during his time in prison. It's insane. But thank God there's people out you making the differences that you're making, Nikki. We appreciate your time today.
Well, thanks for having me on. I'm certainly trying.
Yeah, you're doing a great job. Stay in touch. Let's have you on again, okay?
All right. Thanks, Leland.
All right. Have a great one. Nikki Gozer, she's terrific. And her story, as you know, as you can tell there, is heartbreaking. But she has converted it into a way to explain and to defend and to stand up for our innate and God-given right to defend our lives. And she brings up a very interesting point about the justice system and how it is failing American society. You know, it's a weird statistic. We have more people in jail per capita than China does. And they're a communist nation. How is that happening? And it is true that there are racial disparities in that. And part of that is because we criminalize, you know, so many things that it makes it so easy for people to become criminals. And we don't have a real, there definitely needs to be reform. And I hear my American brothers and sisters in talking about this, and we need to. But I wanted her story because I think it drives it home where if you are a person who says, yeah, that's interesting, but it doesn't really affect me, it affects everyone. This is super important, and it matters. And so we have to really think through this process. And, you know, defunding the police is the dumbest idea and the dumbest way to go about that. I think police need to be even more funded and they need to be better trained. And we need to have a more selective way of picking police. But at the same time, there needs to be reform to the justice system and there needs to be reform to police tactics in some places and cases. But this just kind of drives all of that home. Anyway, if you like what we're doing here, we've got some great guests coming up. I think you're absolutely going to love. We're going to talk some Bigfoot stuff, and we're going to talk some Cryptid Con coming up. Lee Kirkland's going to join us, and Dr. Jeff Muldrum from Idaho State University, who is a Bigfoot researcher. We're going to talk to him. So we got some fun stuff coming up on the show, too. Cameron Mills will be back. Thanks to Dynamics Productions for their help with the show, as well as JP Web Design. If you like what we're doing here, please share it with your friends. It's a free download, a free subscription at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and at iHeartRadio. Just download the app and search The Disruption Zone, and bam! It will deliver fresh new episodes directly to your phone. All right. You can follow me on Twitter. It's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption, and on Instagram at Great Leilando and at The Disruption Zone. Thanks for listening. I'm Leland Conway, The Disruption Zone.